This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas. Sasha Ladipova, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you for inviting me.
Just to clarify, you said you're from Ukraine and you are in the US now.
Yeah. I was born in the Soviet Union, but I moved to the US for my graduate degree. And then I subsequently got a job and stayed and then got married and have children. And, you know, I'm a US citizen. So.
Well, I'm going to let you speak for as long as you want because I love your accent.
Okay.
Speaking of love, your Substack is something that I love and I have loved for quite a long time. Tell me a little bit about yourself because there's this interesting dichotomy that I picked up from what you write. You write on very, very important topics and art.
Yeah. So, well, when I started Substack, before Substack, I was publishing just video PowerPoint presentations on BitChute. I was canceled everywhere immediately. And of course, you know, BitChute was the only place. And then I would just push it also on Telegram. And, I had some followers at that time, not a lot, but there were some followers and people were very interested in this analysis I was doing together with Craig Parody Cooper. I don't know if you know of him. He put together this website, How Bad Is Your Badge? And so that was our primary focus. And the website was very, very popular. And so a lot of people asked for, well, we want it in writing, you know, like written articles. And I looked into Substack and it seemed like a good platform. So I started writing there and that grew quite a bit. And as also the readers said, oh, we also want to see your art. And I said, well, okay. And so I started putting artwork with every article and they are unrelated, obviously, to the theme of the article. But that's somehow people like it because what I write about is very, they're telling me what I write about is very scary and depressing. And so when they see the art piece, it kind of gives them something optimistic to look at. So.
I actually can relate to that because I am professionally a cartoonist.
I love your cartoons. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And so I can relate to what you're saying because mm-hmm. I find an interesting relationship between these topics and cartoons.
Yeah.
It works. It works, doesn't it?
Well, it works. Yeah. So like for cartoonists, you have plenty, of course, of material here. And, I really like yours. I mean, I like your style of cartoon. It's great. I'm more of a, you know, I try to do more of a fine art. So it's difficult to kind of merge these two. But anyway, people seem to like it. So.
Your art is quite beautiful. Tell me a little bit about your art background. And so do you work on canvas with oil?
I kind of use all sorts of medium. I sketch a lot with ink. That's just for myself, thinking through different projects. I was doing oil paintings in the past few years. Then I started doing watercolors as well. I made some watercolor pieces for my friends, you know, for like Chinese New Year. You know, it's a tradition. I just make them cards of, you know, because there's different animals and like dragons and, you know, things like that. Tiger, you know, I did tiger and rabbit and dragon. And, you know, I gave them different types of dragons and rabbits, and it's like a lottery. You pull your own dragon, and it's kind of a game. And you know, and then I published these dragons. The originals I gave away to my friends. I published these dragons, and it was a huge. They're like, we want the dragons. We want the prints of the dragons. So I sold a bunch of prints of the dragons, and I was like, well, you know, watercolor is kind of faster. I mean, it's more difficult to do a good watercolor, but it's faster if you know what you're doing. So I started doing some watercolors as well. So now I'm kind of like switch back and forth whenever I have time for what, you know.
I'm trying to find a segue from your art into the topic and I'm not winning. So let's just go straight in. Let's just go straight into it. One of the themes that you've been covering over the last few years is the COVID military operation. And I'm so glad that somebody other than me who saw that it was a Department of Defense operation. Take me back a little bit.
Right. So initially, I didn't know it was military operations. So when, as I said, when I started working on this, I worked mostly with VAERS data, CDC Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. That's the only public data set available. So when I started working with it, my first initial finding was that the batches were extremely variable in terms of adverse events and deaths that they were causing. And that's a huge signal. I come from pharmaceutical research and development. It's a huge signal of non-compliance with good manufacturing practices, which is a violation of pharmaceutical law, a very severe one. And I thought, wow, you know, there's something really terrible going on here, and we need to, you know, complain and make the officials at the FDA aware. I wrote letters to all the senior members of the FDA and vaccine approval committee. I received no answers. I published these statistics initially in the UK, and then it was picked up in the US, and then Craig Brady Cooper made the website. So after a while looking into this, we thought that it was still just a violation of the CGMP. And that because of the rush, because of the political nature of all of this, nobody was concerned or worried. I didn't want to prosecute. But eventually I ran into analysis by Catherine Watt, who is my friend and colleague now on Substack. And she wrote from a different point of view. So I'm looking from the pharmaceutical manufacturing. And she wrote from the point of view of law. And I didn't know much about law at that time. So she's a paralegal, and she's done extensive research into the laws that the United States is using, and also the allied countries are using to do all this sort of legally on paper. But they're committing murder, and they made it legal for themselves to commit murder. So you can't call it legal. You cannot legalize murder. Anyway, so at that time, when I read her analysis, it became clear to me that this is a much more this is a much more severe problem than I thought, and this has to do with law and perversion of law, and how governments legalized, as I said, they legalized genocide and murder by vaccines and by, you know, hospital murder protocols to fake pandemics. And so that eventually led me to both of us to understand that it was really the Department of Defense inside the U.S. Who were ordering these products and funding them through Department of Defense, through Defense Production Act. And it's a historical framework that the U.S. used. I also wrote an article about it. For example, they did the same, it's almost identical framework that they used to purchase Agent Orange, which is the defoliant, right? That was used in Vietnam in millions of tons, was sprayed everywhere, polluted, you know, caused humongous damage, you know, health damage, soil damage. There's still, it's still polluted and poisoned there. And what they did is they compelled, through Defense Production Act, nine companies, including Monsanto and Dow, to produce these products and gave them full liability protection. So there has never been an account, even though millions of people were injured, including hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of U.S. service members were injured by this. So we're not even talking about the Vietnamese, but nobody has received any proper compensation. They completely denied that anybody was injured, that anything was done wrong, the U.S. government did. And then ultimately, after 24, 26 years of litigation, of private litigation, the Veterans Administration settled with survivors, whoever was left over, and paid out, you know, they advertised the fund, you can still find it on VA's website, advertised the fund of something like $180 million. And they said, oh, it's the largest payout private settlement in history. And this fund paid out about 100,000. So essentially about 100,000 claims were submitted, 50,000 claims were accepted, and average payout was $3,800.
What?
Yes. This is how this is going to end. And that's what I'm telling people, because all the lawyers are, and everybody in the freedom, health freedom media, and I even get attacked for saying this, but everybody's saying, do you have to prosecute Pfizer and Moderna, prosecute Pfizer. This is not going to work, because Pfizer just did what the government, what military told them to do. Under Defense Production Act, they have no choice but fulfill those orders. If the management says we don't do it, they will lose the contract. The government will find a way to punish them also. And the board of directors will be fired because the shareholders, you know, the fiduciary duty to the shareholders is to take those contracts.
That's why Fauci and Bill Gates will never get any type of sentencing, because they were just the pawns.
Right. And they're also, yeah, they're not going to get any sentencing because they're also, you know, soldiers fulfilling orders of the U.S. government. Everybody pretends like it's Fauci masterminded this global pandemic, but he didn't, because the in the U.S. and then globally, obviously, the body that was in charge of the COVID pandemic response wasn't HHS and wasn't NIH. It had nothing to do with Fauci. Fauci wasn't even in the room. It was the National Security Council. National Security Council is an advisory body to the President of the United States. At the time, it was Trump. And that it consists of heads of military, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and heads of intelligence agencies. And their job is to advise the president on war and national security and things like bioterrorism. And they devised the pandemic response. Health and Human Services had nothing to do with it. They were a supporting role. And Fauci was just a puppet to show to the public so that every now and then some Congress members can yell at him and ask him about, you know, gain of function in Wuhan, which is another, you know, fairy tale. And so that everybody can be confused, yelling at Fauci while they are free to do what they're always planning to do.
But that's the thing that has annoyed me so much, Sasha, over the last couple of years. Everybody just wants to take down Fauci, even people on our side, and they keep missing the point that it's not him.
That's not him.
He's just a guy who went onto TV, onto CNN and everywhere and saying, you don't have to wear a mask. Oh, you must wear a mask. Oh, you must wear two masks. Oh, you must wear three masks. Uh-huh. Meanwhile, the real stuff's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. He's a spokesperson. And yeah, he's evil. There's, you know, plenty of things he should be prosecuted for. But this is not his, you know, he wasn't in charge of anything here. He was just a spokesperson pretending like this is a science. And again, that's another point that people miss. Everyone on our side, I forget the deluded, the other side, but the ones who are supposed to be awake and aware, they all around this, like that, like this is a scientific issue, that this is
it's not
a question of some sort of scientific data proof that it's dangerous. It's not. It's an issue of law, and it's an issue of military law and military attack by the governments onto their own people.
And it happened just coincidentally, all at the same time around the world.
Yeah. Imagine that.
But I mean, something that people also missed, tell me if I'm correct here, but you know, if it was a military operation, which it obviously was, why do people ignore individuals like Deborah Birx and Matthew Pottinger, who were part of the team that basically took over Trump's, well, they took over the White House.
Yeah. So Deborah Birx, who everybody thinks that she's somehow from HHS, she's not. She's from State Department. Okay. So this is the spook side of the National Security Council. So she's, yeah, much more important than Fauci. And so she needs to be questioned. But also the DARPA people who have produced whatever the chemical weapons that they used to fake COVID epidemic in the first place, DARPA also needs to be questioned. And nobody is paying attention to those people. And they're actually, so they're not very high level military people. So I pointed out to Colonel Hepburn, Matt Hepburn, who claims to be the mastermind of pandemic preparedness since a long time ago, since like 2017 or so. So he goes on TED Talks and presents like, you know, I came up with this plan, with a strategy to create a consortium with pharmaceutical companies where they will be making countermeasures for us. So countermeasures, you know, this is a military grade materials or products. In case of pharmaceutical companies, it's all these vaccines and therapeutics that are classified as countermeasures. And as a status of countermeasure, it sits outside of pharmaceutical law and regulation. So this is how I discovered that what they advertise as vaccines is actually, well, it's not even a pharmaceutical product. It's not regulated like any drug, does not require clinical trials. Actually, clinical trials legally not possible for these countermeasures. But Matt Hepburn organized this consortium that now consists of about 300 different companies for the military, for DARPA. So that DARPA gives them grants to do research. And then what happened is Matt Hepburn was the person who called all of the pharmaceutical companies on February 4th, 2020. He placed the phone call to all pharmaceutical companies, members of this consortium, and told them to switch to COVID because it has been designated national security threat. This is, I remind you, before Trump even announced that there was an emergency a month before. So who gave a colonel in DARPA this much power to run ahead of the U.S. president on this decision? Why isn't he in Congress answering these questions?
What do you think Trump knew?
Well, by his behavior, documented behavior, it seems to me that this was the sequence of events. DARPA ran ahead, National Security Council, and DARPA ran ahead with this plan. They were in huge rush. As you can see, on February 4th, there was nothing, no real illness anywhere. Yet, you know, they placed the phone call. They tell the entire consortium of pharmaceutical companies to switch to COVID from there. Previously, they were working on so-called pan-influenza models. They said, oh, no, not switch to COVID. It's national security threat. We've been attacked. It's war. Based on no data whatsoever.
Are you saying, Sasha, that Trump was duped?
Initially, I think yes. So these guys ran ahead. Then there was another instance where, so I also published on a bunch of Pentagon press events about Operation Warp Speed. They're discussing all this. It's out in the open. Then there was another event where he fired Jennifer Santos, who was at the time in the procurement, or I forget her exact title, but she was the one who interacted with providers, suppliers to the Defense Department of different military stuff, and including these vaccines. So she authorized funding under Defense Production Act, like $50 billion. She herself authorized without Trump's approval. So that needs to be approved by the president, but she just went ahead. So again, the army runs ahead with their plan, but who cares about what Trump thinks? And Trump got pissed off. So because they kind of like went outside of authority, chain of authority, he got pissed off and he fired her. And that was the only thing he could do to like fight with them. So he fired her, but she immediately got placed into Navy, into another cushy job. So the firing wasn't even, you know, but it was a big deal. She apparently cried on the phone call with press, and there was like, it was publicized that this was a big, big event. But that just shows that, again, he had no control of them. He tried to yank the leash that he thought he had, but he didn't have any leash. They were acting by themselves. And then there was a famous video recorded with Mike Pompeo and Trump at some press event where Mike Pompeo says, and this is on March 20th, so again, way later. Mike Pompeo said, oh, we're in live exercise, and Trump is visibly surprised and starts saying, oh, you should have told us, you should have told us. So that just indicates to me that he didn't know until then. And then he probably realized he's pretty smart. So he realized what's going on, but he since then has been playing this Operation Warp Speed tune and he won't change it.
Why though? Do you think he genuinely believes that it was a scientific event that required a vaccine to make America great again? Or do you think he's actually lying?
I think at this point he's actually lying because, as I said, he's not dumb. He hasn't been banned on the internet. All of us have figured it out, and you know, like he still can't. No, that's not possible. So at this point he's lying. Now, why he's lying? I mean, I don't know. We can speculate. Initially, he may have thought that it was a real pandemic. He may have then maybe somebody told him, oh, you know, we did these things because it was an attack from China. So he believed that, you know, backup story for a while. But by now, it's not possible that he doesn't know. He met with people who were injured by the vaccines recently, as far as I've seen clips of this. So again, people directly told him that they were poisoned and injured by this.
And RFK.
Yeah, and RFK Jr. also knows all of this. All of this, my material, I mean, we've discussed it several times on his podcast. So there's no way that Trump doesn't know. He does. Now, but what I'm very worried about in his case is, why is he lying?
Do you think he's lying to protect himself?
It's possible. It's possible that somehow he got threatened, blackmailed, in which case, you know, I don't want a president of the United States to be threatened and blackmailed. Not that I'm not for Kamala, for sure. That's a, just a total disaster. But, you know. I mean, that, oh, my God. That don't even get
me. You have to set the bar very low if you're going to, you know, go with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
But, yeah, so we're in a really, really bad situation here because who has what over him? Is it money? Is it threats? Is it blackmail? Another point that many people brought up, including Catherine, is that the Constitution is suspended.
Yes. Yes.
We don't have Constitution and they're lying about it, but the courts don't lie. So the courts rule as if our Constitution is suspended and as if we are under some sort of military law. And it may be that as a president, he doesn't have constitutional power anymore, which is another even worse situation. So that remains, I can't be in Trump's head. He needs to come clean and explain to people what did he know, and why is he lying now?
Do you think maybe that instead of him coming clean, he'll try and work his way into it by bringing RFK into his cabinet?
That would be, I mean, it's probably the best scenario we can hope for, that RFK Jr. is put in charge of HHS and starts undoing this. I mean, I don't think they can entirely solve it. This will probably take a while. But there are some fairly simple things that can be done to start undoing it, and even immediately. So both me and Catherine talked about it. It's nullification of bad laws. So as I said, those laws that legalize murder, you can immediately nullify them. Even one part, you know, so there are like three parts of the law, which is public health emergency, EUA countermeasures, and PREP Act. So even if they just nullified one, like PREP Act, it already destabilizes this whole legal cage that they built to put us all in and start killing us. So once somebody has, you know, removed PREP Act, they will stop shipping those vaccines immediately. Because also in, for example, I wrote about this, there's this company, Emergent BioSolutions, who is an exclusive maker of anthrax vaccine. And they were also making Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccine in the United States. And in their DOD contract for vaccines, it has a specific clause that says, and this goes from like 2012, so they've always had this clause. This clause says, if there is no current PREP Act declaration for this particular product, then whatever we have already shipped under this contract to the U.S. government is not for human use. So, I mean, they absolutely clearly know that without PREP Act, their product, you know, they're going to be hugely liable. And they know that their product is poison, you know, but they're shipping it because the government compels them. If we just nullify PREP Act, that would be a huge victory. If we nullify that EUA countermeasures law or you know, make modifications to public health emergencies law, you know, there are many, many things that can be done quickly to stop this and then to start kind of undoing, unraveling and investigating what's happening.
What role did Event 201 play?
Well, 201 was just to practice, brainwash and pre-program all the government actors. But that's actually an important point. So it wasn't the only Event 201. They practiced many, many times. There were about 20 different events. And of course, they did it all over the world, international. They communicate through WHO, through UN mechanisms. So over time, they've pre-programmed everyone, first of all, to believe several important lies. First of all, to believe that pandemics are possible. They're not possible. It never happened in history of human time. That not only the pandemics are possible, but also the viruses can be weaponized, that new viruses can be made from scratch. That's absolutely not true. And I actually documented an even a huge book from National Academies of Science saying it's not possible to do. But through Hollywood, through media, through popular press, through all kinds of, you know, think back about two decades, everyone has been brainwashed to believe that this is possible. They can make viruses in the lab. They can tinker with the viruses. They can make them more lethal and spreadable. And the pandemics can happen that way. So now everyone is brainwashed into this, including the experts, importantly. And then they practice this. So they practice, what do we do when there's this news footage being announced, which we've pre-made with Hollywood? And so now we're going to splash all this on the internet. And what do you guys do? And you give them these protocols. Oh, you lock everyone down. You do the masking. You do the blah, blah, blah. All of this is practiced many times. Now everybody is just like on autopilot. And then they do it. And by the way, Ralph Baric, in 2006 paper, is like a big 50-page report that he wrote. He explained that we can't really make viruses in the lab. Okay, you know, you could make some lab tricks, but to make them at scale and working like out in the wild and spreading, that's not possible. So he explained why. There's several significant reasons why. And ultimately, he said the best use of these techniques in the lab and these this technology is to make hoax pandemics, is to produce fear and panic and make the governments act all in concert along predicted lines. Because obviously this is wonderful. It's wonderful for those who want to grab power and also make money. Because if you can create a media event that will force every government in the world to act in a predictable way, imagine how much money you can make from this. And imagine how much power you can grab. He said that's the best use of it. And that's what they did.
Go back to what you're saying about viruses and no pandemics.
The pandemic story is, well, first of all, pandemics never happened in the world. So pandemic is an epidemic simultaneously occurring all over the world. And like, let's say, for example, in North, South America and Africa, simultaneously, we have a pandemic of some sort of a virus. That never happened in history of time. People immediately say, but what about the black, you know, the black plague and the cholera and so forth?
The Spanish flu.
Spanish flu, right? So like, let's address these three. So first, let's go to the Black Death plague. Wasn't a pandemic. It was in several very crowded European cities. It was a pretty consistent event every few years. And the reason for that was because those cities were crowded. There was no plumbing. There was raw sewage in the streets flowing. I recently visited Amsterdam. It's one of the cities. I went to museums and there are a lot of drawings and etchings and paintings showing Amsterdam, let's say in 1600s. And there is raw sewage in the streets and there are domestic animals living in those tiny, tiny houses, right? You know, the canals. So the canals are full of raw sewage and they have domestic animals just, you know, walking around there and living in those houses. The houses were small. The houses didn't have plumbing. There were outhouses right next to the kitchens. So what happens is it's infested with rats and rats bite people. I will publish on this more, but it's actually a phenomenon of anaphylaxis where the second bite. So enough people got bit by rats in the area, which carry the toxins from bacteria of this plague bacterium. And they got kind of primed for this. And that's actually an anaphylactic reaction. And then the second time they get bit by the same rat with the same type of a toxin, which is common because they all share in the sewage. That's when the plague starts. And that's localized to this area. So for example, Isaac Newton was a student at the time of the plague in London. He moved out from where he was to a village and lived happily ever after. So just, you know, a little bit away, there was no plague. So it's not a pandemic. It's a localized event because of the unsanitary conditions. Same with cholera. Now, the Spanish flu was, that was kind of mythology. And it now stems from the U.S. Department of Defense or predecessor. Because at the time, they started injecting U.S. military, which was millions of people, and sending them to the war. They were injecting them with just all horrible, horrible vaccines. There were several, in addition to smallpox, there were several others that were introduced at the time with humongous toxicities. And again, the vaccinations also produce this effect of priming the system to get a reaction to when it encounters the pathogen. And so it also wasn't a pandemic. You know, there's a lot of, I also published on this quite a bit and demonstrating that even with the overblown statistics and assigning everything to it, at the time there was a huge war in Europe. There was typhoid fever, typhus, which are also all carried by insects and bites of animals and water sanitation issues. And then this priming of the young people with these vaccines created these events of illness, which everybody said, oh, it was a virus, but it wasn't a virus.
Polio also was, it had to do with insecticide, didn't it?
Yes. So polio is associated with DDT, DDT was introduced, actually won a Nobel Prize for invention of DDT. Then it was tested and then mass deployed by USDA, US Department of Agriculture, in 1943. And that immediately coincided with a huge spike of polio in the US. So obviously that it was caused by that. Polio existed before because of different chemicals have been used before, but sort of the mass, you can see it on the graphs, the mass deployment in 43 resulted in the spike of polio, which was then fear-mongered like crazy. And when the first vaccine for polio was developed, which was Salk vaccine, which was contaminated with SV40, just like mRNA shots are, and had all kinds of other problems. So they fear more than everybody, especially parents. Oh, you know, you have to vaccinate your children because blah, 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 blah. Everybody runs, the same thing, runs, injects Salk vaccine. Kids started immediately having paralysis, dying. It was a huge scandal. I wrote about this, and this is mentioned in, I recommend everyone to read Ed Haslam's Dr. Mary's Monkey. It's a book available on Amazon. It's fascinating. So he talks about this. At the time, the head of oncology, the prestigious cancer society, Dr. Alton Ochsner, he was such a proponent of it. He killed his grandkid, a grandson, with this vaccine and crippled his granddaughter. These people are psychopaths. They do it all the time. Look at Peter Hotez. He poisoned his daughter. And this is not the first example. There's examples all over the history of this. These crazed vaccinators that work on injections and poisoning, they kill their own kids and sometimes themselves. So that's what happens. They removed Salk vaccine. It was a big scandal. They replaced it with something else. It's very toxic too, and it does not prevent polio. Again, I get so many like angry comments saying, but vaccines stop polio. And they say, well, go read on CDC's website on the label. It says it does not prevent polio.
And smallpox and measles, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Funnily enough, Sasha, I had a look at animal data. I have not yet found any viral pandemic ever in any kind of natural environment.
No, they don't exist. There are disease outbreaks, which you can always trace back to. There was either some toxicity poisoning event with like pesticides or herbicides or, you know, dumping some chemical waste somewhere, or it's related to pollution of water with sewage. And again, you know, anaphylaxis is a very important concept that I will write more about. This is, you know, it's a little too early for me to discuss it in detail here, but I will have extensive articles on this. What we've discovered with Catherine, there was another Nobel Prize given for anaphylaxis research to Charles Richer and French research. He was one of the also crazy vaccinators, but in any case, he described that you can't actually vaccinate because injection of any protein, even benign ones like milk, will produce an anaphylactic shock or anaphylactic reaction. And any allergy, even, you know, you have slight rash or something, it's anaphylaxis. It's a spectrum. So for anywhere from slight rash to having an anaphylactic shock is all the same phenomenon. And it's all related to getting proteins, foreign proteins, directly into the bloodstream, bypassing digestion. It can happen in a natural way. For example, like as I was describing the plague, but, you know, bites of the rats, if you have hugely unsanitary conditions and rodents and lice and fleas, this can happen naturally. But in the modern times, it's an extremely low probability that somebody will be bit twice by the rat that has the same toxin and also bit within the pre-specified anaphylaxis window. So that's a very, very low probability in the modern times. Think about, you know, the way we live. So there is no possibility really of having natural pandemics. Yet we're being told all the time that if we stop vaccinating, you know, the world will come to an end and everybody will die from some sort of a pandemic.
Is the existence of viruses relevant?
It's sort of relevant, I think. Another thing that you learn from history when you start reading books, you know, 100-year-old books on this matter, is they always called virus a poison. It wasn't what they tell you today the virus is. So, for example, the same guy, Charles Richer, writes in his book that, I went and I got CNM. So he created a poison from CNM and tentacles, and he dissolved them in glycerin. And he said, oh, and this is my, you know, I was doing experiments with my virus of actinaria. So he calls this vat of poison that he made virus, which is what it was. That was the definition. They didn't claim that there was some sort of a random natural particle flying around, attacking strangers and infecting them with these deadly poisons. No, he actually described exactly how you get infected.
They changed the definition.
So the definition became mythology. It became a metaphor. It became something that Hollywood makes these scary movies about. But it has nothing to do with reality because, yeah, I agree with people who are saying viruses haven't been isolated. It's not possible because they are not there. You know, they do all this hocus pocus, you know, culturing with various things and destroying the cells and then pointing at something on the microscope and say, see, this is a virus.
You said a moment ago that it's sort of relevant. Why sort of?
Well, because it's a relevant question, but I think the important part is to look into how the so-called infectious disease is actually produced, which is the anaphylaxis. And, you know, I'll work more on that and I'll publish more on that. And then what vaccines do is inducing anaphylaxis and then inducing microbiome destruction. This is going to unify people, in my opinion, as opposed to, you know, one side saying there's no viruses and the other side saying you're crazy. So I think that would be a unifying way to say we can explain how these infectious diseases occurred in the history and what happens with vaccination. And if you look at it and if you read it, you immediately realize that vaccination is ludicrous. It's a very dangerous exercise in inducing anaphylaxis to such an extent that everybody becomes sick and a lot of people die. And now we have all these chronic illnesses that everybody says, oh, it's food. It's not distraction. Oh, it's because of our toxic food. Our food is not toxic. Yes, it can be approved. Yes, you shouldn't buy like Velveeta and Spam and all those like Twinkies and things like that. But there is access to normal food that's okay. And that's not the gravest concern. The gravest concern is vaccination. Vaccination destroys your microbiome. And when your microbiome is destroyed, then you get obesity, then you get diabetes, then you get the ADHD and autism. And
cancer.
Cancer, yes, and dementia. So that should be the focus. And I think if we start looking into these two hypotheses and testing them, which today everybody's prevented from looking into that, but if we start looking into that, we will unify and we will see that, you know, viral theory was used to scare people into self-destructive behavior.
Okay, so if we go back to 2020, Sasha, if nobody had said anything, nothing different would have occurred. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So if media didn't propagandize this as a novel pandemic virus, nobody would have noticed. Okay, there was a unique illness. I think what people kind of discount, but I strongly insist on that the Department of Defense probably distributed some sort of poisoning agents that produced some weird novel symptoms. And the reason I'm saying that is because I've experienced it myself, and that wasn't the flu, and it wasn't in my head. And A lot of people also report the same thing, and the marked ones is either loss of taste and smell or bizarre changes in taste and smell. No, right. No respiratory cold or flu, they don't cause this, and it's very severe to the extent that people would get anorexic, and lose a lot of weight, which happened to me. I lost 20 pounds in 1 week. Because I could not eat anything because it all smelled like terrible, you know.
Well, that sounds great though. Most women would want that.
it didn't feel great at the time, I'm telling you. But right, so it was a great weight loss. Maybe they can advertise it as a new weight loss drug, you know. After the second, no, they'll make a lot of money. But you know, at the time it was very scary, and so like. I also published on this James Giordano, who is a fake neuroscientist from Department of Defense. He explained it in one of his lectures in 2017, how to fake pandemics. And so that's specifically what he said. He said, we distribute some sort of a neurotoxic agent, which is not lethal, But it's bizarre. It produces all these like strange symptoms that everybody freaks out. So all they need to do is freak people out. From then on, there's media panic and subsequent all the like, you know, the murder protocols in the hospitals, which produced the death count. What's important is people who say there was no pandemic because there was no excess mortality miss the point that the cause of death and the cause of illness do not have to be the same. So the cause of death was a murder protocol. The cause of illness was non-lethal distributed agent. And so if it's not lethal, it's not going to show up in the excess mortality data.
But like ventilators killed people.
Ventilators kill people, and that will show up in the excess mortality. And you can trace it to the use of ventilators, to the financial incentives, to the survivors who are testifying. I've spoken with a lot of people. I've testified together with them. There's a lot of very good data compiled on this matter by multiple researchers. They show definitively that this was a hospital murder protocol. Actually, I also experienced it with my mother-in-law. She was nearly murdered in an upstate New York hospital. And this was as late as 2023. So with the same protocol, I mean, I can walk you through the protocol, how they do it, how they gaslight the patient, how they gaslight the caregivers and family members.
Sure, sure. Go for it. But just to be clear, those doctors don't necessarily know, right?
Well, maybe first couple of weeks they didn't. After first couple of weeks, if you're a doctor and you've cared for patients, oh, you know that this protocol is not working. What's interesting, though, first of all, in the hospitals in the U.S., COVID wards were separate. So it would be a separate floor, and it was called COVID ward. And because it's a separate...
Same here.
Yeah, and they were, well, justified because it's a dangerous infectious disease, okay? So, but that separate floor is funded separately. It's funded from federal money. By federal, I mean Department of Defense money. And they frequently staffed, so the doctors were not there all the time, but the floor was staffed with nurses, and a lot of them were so-called traveling nurses. Again, also at the beginning of pandemic, they said, oh, you know, the licensing of, because we have state-based licensing of nurses and doctors, they said, oh, because there's shortages and there are these like desperate situations, we suspend those rules. And now the nurses from one state can go work in another state. So like a lot of nurses showed up in New York, God knows from where. And who is checking their licensing? Nobody's checking really. So they come with some sort of papers. They say they are nurses. They get staffed in this COVID wards. And then they implement these protocols. And we ran into one of those nurses, or actually several, but the head nurse in that state New York hospital was extremely interesting person. She was almost like she was from a prison nurse or something by her behavior. And another interesting fact is they were all hiding their names. We couldn't get any name.
Really?
Yeah. We could not get any name out of them. They had name badges with only first name, and they would even turn them back. So that you couldn't see it. And then when we asked point blank, you know, what's your name? They wouldn't give it to us.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So these traveling nurses, it's a very interesting question. Where they came from? Did they have real credentials? Were they military? Were they military contractors? How were they funded? There's still no answers to that.
Okay. So how would this toxin or agent or whatever have been distributed?
I've read the literature and there's pretty straightforward. You can find it in many publications. Historically, these kinds of agents are distributed by aerosols, or you know, you can also formulate them in gels, ingestible. Although ingestion is not the most potent way of setting off some sort of a respiratory-like illness, but it could. They also could have figured out what majority of the population were primed with, depending on the vaccination schedules and vaccines administered in certain areas. You know what the majority of the population in that area has been primed for with this anaphylactic, you know, first thing. Like if you got a flu shot and we know the composition, it's possible to create an aerosol then to get you with on the subway.
So like what, like a chemtrail?
Yeah, but not from like that high. So they would have the sprayers. There are sprayers that can be installed on subways. There is, you know, hand sprayers. Again, like in that article of Agent Orange, there's a lot of discussion of how it was sprayed. So from helicopters, from drones, from subway sprayers, from handheld sprayers, anything. You can create these aerosols and you can distribute them, especially crowded, you know, like subways, like New York City, for example, is a prime location, and that's been done historically on many occasions. And then you can also have like the gels and spreadable and something that can go through skin, like powders that can also go through skin. So there are ways of putting it out, but I don't know what exactly was used.
And in terms of distribution, it would have been fairly simple. You just ship it in advance.
Yeah, you ship it in advance. A lot of these things also now, these are chemical weapons. They're not biologics. It could be, what they could have done possibly is formulate that spike protein that they're talking about all the time. It's like formulate it separately. Because Pfizer, I have Pfizer documents that they produced it for scientific validation. So you can synthetically make it. So maybe they made the synthetic spike protein, which is still a chemical, but it kind of has a mimicking biological properties because it's a large molecule, and maybe they formulated it in some stabilizer and distributed it that way. But
mm-hmm. What you're saying could also then explain why many countries were skipped. I mean, Africa, for example, mm-hmm. almost entirely skipped COVID-19.
Yeah, because this particular symptomatic, like real illness, I'm not saying about miscategorizing and all that, but this symptomatic illness with specific symptoms, that was only possible in a few locations. As I said, like large crowded cities with subways and maybe some other areas where they would be accessible. But, it skipped. And even in the places where it did have symptoms, it frequently people noted that like it didn't cross county lines or didn't even cross the street, which tells you that it's being deployed. It's not a virus. It's some agent being deployed here.
In terms of the vaccines, there was obviously a lot of debate between mRNA and non-mRNA.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, like as they all decided with mRNA immediately. Also that was very interesting to observe that all the pharma companies decided that this is the mechanism that they're going to use, which was the most toxic possible mechanism that you can imagine, which is like selecting the spike protein as a target and then inducing production of it inside the people's bodies. I mean, it's nonsense. From the pharmaceutical design perspective, it's the worst thing you can possibly do. And, my friend Mike Eden, together with Wolfgang Woodard, immediately wrote that complaint to the European Medicines Agency. That was in December 2020, I think they published it. Everything that they said in it turned out to be true because it was predictable, very predictable by anybody familiar with medicinal chemistry or pharmaceutical design could say that, this is just going to cause death and disaster.
Do you think there's any merit to that snake venom argument?
Oh, I get so tired of this. No, there are no snake venoms anywhere in there. First of all, snake venom is it's a very complex liquid, right? So very complex biological substance that is only obtainable from snakes. You can't make snake venom. You have to harvest it from snakes, so which means you have to somehow, capture the snakes, breed them, and then harvest, which is very dangerous, right? And very expensive. It is done sometimes for research purposes. So there are some labs that work with venomous different creatures like, sea anemone and jellyfish and snake. But those are very small facilities that harvest them for research purposes to figure out what it's composed of and figure out which parts, we can use for what. And they are used widely. This has been gone on for a while. A lot of venoms have been characterized and disassembled into parts. And then from those parts, we figure out, okay, we can synthetically make this piece, and it can be used either as medicine. And they're usually called peptides, small proteins, peptides. They're very stable. You can make them in volume, and you can use them for various purposes. They're used in cosmetics. They're used in medicinal chemistry, both for making new drugs and for studying. So, like making assays for studying drugs. So these are chemical. They came from research into snake venoms. But the way they're made has nothing to do with snakes or venoms or anything. It's just synthetic chemistry. what Venom was used for is to understand like how chemistry can work. Okay. So that's why I'm like, people just every time in my comment section, oh, but this is a snake venom. Oh my God. No, it's not.
As you and I are recording this right now, there is an attempt to fear-monger the world into Mpox.
Oh, yeah. That's nonsense. Most of the time, it's a side effect of vaccination or with these mRNA vaccines. Yeah, there's a lot of rashes that look like that, and the immune system gets destroyed to the extent that it will produce all kinds of weird stuff. Shingles is very common after this. So it's shingles, and there are some other kind of skin conditions that people said, oh yeah, it's probably that. So for the most part, this is a side effect of vaccinations, or it's just plain, you know, straight lying from the authorities to fearmonger people into, again, more vaccinations. I'm saying you should not inject any proteins at all.
Do you think that millions and millions and millions of people have learned, or do you think there's going to be another pandemic, so to speak?
I kind of hope that we have the critical mass of people who've woken up to this, even the ones who don't openly say that, you know, they changed their minds. Their behavior demonstrates that they did change their mind, or at least got kind of alerted quite a bit to this. So that's a good sign. I think it's not possible. It's probably not possible for the governments to do the same thing again. And they probably know it. So they're trying various things like monkeypox and fearmonger about avian flu or something. But I think the next steps they're going to be doing is trying to just force their agenda, like, you know, force vaccination cards through. But I mean, their usual mechanism, they just give money to the governments who are totally in their pocket and enslaved by debt anyway. So like Portugal now says, oh, you know, we're going to have these digital vaccination cards. Why? Well, because the government got forced and, you know, there's not enough pushback. But I think in other countries, like in the US, I doubt they'll be able to do it without any major, I don't know, war.
Do you think maybe another prong of the attack could be climate change?
And climate change, also, a lot of people don't buy it. It's less sticky as a story versus the invisible viruses. Although, yeah, a lot of people fall for it, but many people don't buy it. There's a lot of sort of industry businesses that understand how destructive this is to the economy. So I'm kind of optimistic that that's not going to stick either. And we're probably entering a cooling period anyway. So they can't fear monger anymore. Oh, it's like 120 degrees and, you know.
Sasha, chatting to you is oddly very uplifting. I get a sense of hope and optimism from you.
I am very optimistic. I think we win. I think, you know, people get frustrated because they don't see it on the, you know, on the news, mainstream media news, or their deluded relatives are still like, you know, wanting the masks in the family party or something. So that's frustrating. It's very frustrating. Well, my friends don't invite me to go out. Like they go out with my husband, but they're never available for me. And I'm like, well, okay.
If I want a nugget of wisdom from you, a great soundbite, what would you say?
This great soundbite. I mean, the best soundbite is do not comply and stop all the injections and protect yourself and protect your family. And those are number one priorities. And if everybody does that, we win.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it's simple as that. You make sure that you're okay, your family is okay, and you protect them, and you don't comply with this nonsense, then they can't do anything.
How can I follow your work?
So I'm publishing, my primary source is Substack. So on Substack, it's Due Diligence and Art is my publication. And, you know, I occasionally also put out things on Twitter, on X, but X, you know, they suppress Substack links. So yeah, it's not very useful. But yeah, people can find my all my writing, all my publications on Substack.
Sasha Ladapova, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you, Jerome. Thank you for inviting me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportjerome.com.